It is the Wednesday Morning Show, and it's time to get connected to nature and local foods. When we connected with Harry Worm on Monday, he said the maple syrup had finally started to flow. He'd collected about 100 gallons so far and was cleaning up his boiler pans. And calving is going on at the same time, and Harry and his wife Judy are expecting 18 or 19 calves this year. Harry and Judy Worm are the owners of Clay Hill Farm and Forest near Brainerd. Harry mostly runs the maple syrup part of their business, and Judy focuses more on their beef, cattle, and hay. Judy also teaches ag at Brainerd High School, and they're on the phone with us this morning to catch us up on what is happening in the sugar bush and on their farm. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning.
Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
How's the sap running now?
Yesterday, it was going pretty good. We picked up almost 200 gallons yesterday.
Wow.
And that's about half of the trees that we have tapped.
Wow. How many trees do you have tapped?
Yeah.
Somewhere between 400 and 500.
Oh, my. So are you running a vacuum system, or is this all bags?
We are doing it all manually. We tap them into 4-gallon pails that sit on the ground. Generally, we can put the pail on the north side of the tree to keep the sap cold or keep it out of the sun.
Right.
I understand you have people come out to see how you make the syrup. What are you showing them when they come tour the farm?
Well, we do a complete start to finish of that sap. So basically they come to the farm, we tell them a little story of the farm, and then we give them a spoon. And so we go out to the woods and we have them taste the sap coming out of a tree, and then pick up the sap, bring it to the boiler room, and then we boil it. They get to see how it's all boiled and cooked down, and then we give them a taste of that syrup coming right out of that, right out of the boiler. It's kind of like fresh baked bread. It never tastes better than when it's fresh out of the cooker.
So describe your boiler room a little bit. I know that there's lots of small, just small operators in the Bemidji area that are just doing it over an open pan over a wood fire or maybe a barrel stove of some sort. Describe your setup.
Well, we started 12 years ago or so over a turkey cooker and 10 taps.
Yeah.
And burned a lot of propane. And then I built a couple of boilers out of big old oil barrels, and we did it over wood that way. Now we've built basically a 24 by 18 foot building, all sheeted inside, all insulated, all closed up, with a big vent out the top. And we have a 2-foot by 8-foot Smoky Lake evaporator sitting in the middle of it.
So you have the channeled pan then that is kind of an S-chamber type boiler.
That is correct. So, yeah, if you flattened out that back pan, it would be almost 15 feet wide. So it's almost like evaporating in a pan that would be 8 foot by 15 feet with fire underneath the whole thing.
Nice.
How did you get started? Have you been doing this? Were your family maple syrupers?
The farm has been in my family since 1955, and just primarily beef and hay production. And the start of the maple syrup part of it occurred about 12 years ago. My brother and I were up in an area and sighting in some fence lines in the fall, and the whole woods was just ablaze, and realizing that it's all maple trees with the color, and kind of always figuring that most of the farm was oaks and some pines and popple, and not realizing the number of maples here. And my brother, man of very few words, he said, "You could tap those trees. That's your kind of thing." So that's our tagline on how we got started on this. And the next spring, we bought 10 taps. And from there, it's blossomed to this commercial evaporator and 400-plus and farm tours. So it's that's the humble beginnings of just one little line. And it is our kind of thing of being able to work with this land, care for the land, produce products that are wholesome, healthy, local. And so from there, we've realized we probably have thousands of maple trees we could be tapping on the 100-plus acres that we have here.
I understand, Judy, that you're more involved in the beef cattle side of things and maybe the haying than the maple syrup.
Well, partly because I still have a day job,
yeah,
and the maple syrup doesn't care about that. It runs all night and day. So that's, and then all the mechanics, of course, that's all Harry's thing. So I help when I can, and, you know, weekends and such. And then, yes, the cattle, the hay production, because that's always been part of my life, and that's my end of the deal on this farm. So we're busy right now. It works out well that we don't go very far in March and April because the sap is running and the calves are coming. So we have 6 on the ground right now and expecting another 10 or so.
Wow. Do you have all cows or do you have steers too?
We do keep over, so we have last year's calves, which are steers at this point, and considered yearlings. And then those get sold to individual producers that want to finish out, feed out a couple of steers for themselves or neighbors or whatever. So they will be sold here in the next month to individual people who wish to have a local source, something that they don't have to buy from a sale barn or wonder where it's been. So, yep.
How is the market going for your local products, both the syrup and the beef?
I think very well. We've always concentrated on quality on both, and not only quality, but standing behind our product. If something isn't right, doesn't go right, there's no questions. It's always, you know, an exchange or a refund, whatever the situation may be. We make it correct. That's just part of a policy from long ago. 50 years ago, 40 years ago, my family had a sweet corn and vegetable stand. And so customer was always right is the phrase I can remember my father saying. And if they had a problem or a question with the products that we gave them, we didn't ask questions. You just exchange it or refund the money, and that's the way we've done business.
On social media, on Facebook, I'm seeing some people that are just starting to boil now, and they're commenting that they're getting more niter than they have. Maybe a question for Harry, but what is niter, and does it change year to year, or is that just based on the trees?
It does change year to year. Niter is basically, sap has a whole bunch of mineral that comes out of the tree right from the moisture in the ground. And that niter, once you start condensing or once you start evaporating off a lot of the water, you concentrate the minerals, and pretty soon they can't stay suspended in the fluid anymore, and they come out to the bottom. And basically, it feels like little gritty sand that falls to the bottom of the boiler and eventually comes out with the syrup, and you run it through a filter to catch that niter. Some years are worse than others. Why? I don't know. Last year, we had a lot of niter. This year, we'll find out as soon as we put fire to the boiler this afternoon.
Can you filter it out? You don't have to let it cool. So I know a lot of people are seeing it kind of form once it's in the jars. Can you filter it out ahead of time?
Well, generally for syrup, if the syrup is, I'll say it for us, we filter coming right out of the boiler. We built a vacuum-powered filtering system. Comes right out of the boiler, and we filter, and we're done filtering. If you get crystal that forms in your jar, you've probably boiled the syrup too much.
Uh-huh.
And what you're seeing is the crystallization of the sugar, because maple syrup can only support about 67% sugar in the fluid. After that, if you concentrate it higher than that, it'll condense into a crystal.
Ah, very good.
So niter generally doesn't form in the jar. Crystal sugar forms in the jar if you boil it too much.
Judy, you also raise hay. Tell us about the hay situation.
The beauty of what we do here in the spring, it's kind of a quiet time, if you want to put it that way, for other farm enterprises, in that the hay is not a time-consuming thing until basically June, July, and August, which happens to work well with the teaching schedule. So we have approximately 300 acres into hay ground, Timothy alfalfa and brome grass, so mix of grasses and alfalfa hay. And we have a couple of my brothers are also part of the landowners, and then also part of the labor force, the tractor drivers, as I call them, for production. And we put up anywhere from 300 to 500 of the big round bales, and then a couple thousand square bales as well. So much of it, of course, is for our own cattle here, but we sell, and we always have sold a lot of hay, especially, and the reason why we still put up square bales, since very few people do, is that's the size that people can handle without equipment, and we sell to a lot of people who have horses or goats, sheep kind of thing, where they're not needing the volume, but they need the convenience of the smaller bales.
Mm. So you teach ag at the high school? Is it in Brainerd?
Yes, yep.
How is it going preparing to teach remotely?
it's interesting. My spring classes are greenhouse-based, so normally we would be pretty much spending each class period out in the greenhouse. And then I also teach at Equine Science, and we no longer have the high school farm that Brainerd used to have, and so I'm based out of the building that's in downtown Brainerd, but I do manage to bring in my horse and donkey and do demos in the back parking lot of the high school, and so that the kids get to do some hands-on stuff as well. But it's really making me realize how hands-on my classes are, and trying to prepare something in-depth and meaningful from a distance. This will be interesting.
Do you see the students being engaged with distance learning, or are they not there mentally or physically?
We haven't actually. They basically have had last week and this week kind of like a two-week spring break. We don't officially launch any assignments to them until Monday the 30th, per the governor's order on that. The schools were closed for 2 weeks, and then March 30th, learning resumed. So this time period, we as teachers have been in there every day preparing and, you know, for converting what normally would be a classroom presentation into everything online. So it's a pretty steep learning curve for all the different tools and applications that are there available for us. And it's also going to be the same for students. Some are, you know, very fluid on internet use, and others, this is going to be a crash course for them to get them going on it.
Yeah, thank you so much for all the extra work you and all the teachers are doing.
It's a lot.
And I have a 15-year-old daughter and some special friends who are teachers, and I've just been watching it all kind of unfold. And the kids do seem engaged, like they want to get going again.
That's the word that I hear. They're bored.
Yeah.
There's only so much streaming they can do on their phones, and So I think we'll be well received next week when we're ready to get them back engaged as well.
Yeah. Last Wednesday, a friend of mine sent a bunch of links for his kids to look at until things get figured out. And he kept getting emails like, I saw this porcupine. I never even saw that kind of porcupine before. I'm going to watch a video on it right now. You know, so he was just like, okay, they're ready. You know, they want to get engaged too. So thank you. We're talking with Judy and Harry Worm from Clay Hill Farm and Forest near Brainerd today. And Harry, we were originally going to talk to you about a unique event, a partnership that you have with Rutgers. Unfortunately, that's been canceled due to the COVID-19 outbreak. But could you tell us about what that was like and what you had planned?
Well, Rutgers, this would be the second year that we did this with Rutgers. Rutgers is a very nice, family-oriented resort. Has a bunch of people. They come up and stay with them for the entire weekend, generally. And they do a whole Maple theme weekend. And from that, the part that we play, we do, Judy does a classroom for younger people, let's say 6 to 12 years old. And then I do basically a maple syrup 101 class for the adults if they ever wanted to learn how to do maple syrup or if they want to do maple syrup themselves in their own backyard. We talk all the way from where we started to where we are today. And then all the steps in between and all, well, I shouldn't say all, a lot of the mistakes we made along the way, we try to teach them so that they don't have to make those same mistakes. And then after we get done with the classroom, we come out here to the farm and we go through the whole maple syrup process from the trees through the boiler, through tasting the syrup, because the taste of syrup changes throughout the year, changing nothing in the process, just the way the sap comes out of the tree. It does change the taste. And we try to show them that or let them taste that. And then anyone who's interested after all the maple syrup stuff is done, they can go over and pet the horse and go look at the calves and, you know, go ride the donkey or whatever, just trying to get a fun time for the kids.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier that you had, did you say you had 200 gallons already?
Yeah, we have, I got about a 300-gallon tank that feeds the boiler, and that is full. We filled it up last night.
Okay, just curious, how much syrup will come out of that?
Well, this this syrup or this sap is pretty high in sugar content, mostly because the ice froze in the pails. And what freezes in the pails is water. What stays in the pail is sugar. So it freezes out the water. So it basically enriches the sap by freezing it. So what's in that tank is about 4.5-5% sugar. And you take the magic number of 86 and divide it by the percentage of sugar, 5%, and you get a number of how many gallons it takes to make a gallon of syrup. So 5 and 86, what does that turn out to be? I don't know. 50, I can't do the math tonight.
Yeah, it's about 15, 18. Yeah.
15, 18 gallons, so it'll take 18 gallons to make a gallon of syrup. Huh. So from that, you know, 18 gallons into 300. So quite a bit. There's quite a bit of syrup in that tank.
In terms of grades of syrup and the darkness, is it the beginning sap flow that produces the best syrup, or is it the tail end sap flow?
You know, that's completely arbitrary. So here's the way it starts. Generally, it starts with a very light colored, very golden colored syrup, and it'll have a less of a maple flavor. It'll have a lighter maple flavor. Even some years here, we get a flavor more toward vanilla. And then when you get into the middle, you'll have what I would say is your typical tasting maple syrup like you buy in the store. More maple flavored, a little darker, more typical of what people would say is maple syrup. And then in the end, you can get syrup that actually tastes more like molasses or licorice. It'll have that much flavor to it, and it will be dark. It can be very, very dark. So it varies throughout the year, even though the process doesn't change. In other words, we collect it fresh, we boil it fresh, and put it in a bottle. That's just the normal curve of making syrup.
Do you blend at the end of the season then? Do you wait to bottle it until it's all together and then mix it and blend it?
We do not. Many, many places do. We do not, because I have people that want that dark syrup. When 2 years ago, we got a bunch of that dark syrup. I put it up for sale. I sold it all in a day because these are normally people who do a lot of smoking of pork or salmon, something like that, and they want that really heavy flavor, and they don't care if it's sweet. They want that really heavy flavor on their smoked meats. I also have people who want that very, very light maple flavor. I think more of them make tea with it or sweeten their tea. or sweeten their coffee, things like that, and don't really need the heavy maple flavor. So I have people who want both, so we do not blend any of our syrup.
Okay.
So where can we get our hands on your syrup?
About 95% of it we sell here off the farm here in Brainerd. We have access to Highway 18. We have signage out there, and most of our syrup is sold that way. We do sell a little bit of it through our Facebook page, and then we have it in Rutgers Gift Shop and also the gift shop here at the Arb, because we do a similar thing to what we do for Rutgers with the Arboretum here in Brainerd.
How many trees does it take to make a gallon of syrup, sap or syrup?
Well, generally we say between 3 and 4 trees will make a gallon of syrup. So we're aiming for a little bit north of 100 gallons of syrup a year. So we tap a little over 400 trees. So we've had instances where 2 trees have produced a gallon of syrup, and we've been as high as 22 trees to produce 1 gallon of syrup. So depending on what the weather is, will depend on how much sap we get.
Okay. So we're at a time where we're social distancing, you know. It's the way of the land. And people are looking for stuff to do while keeping that distance. Do you think maple syruping would work? And if so, what kind of equipment do we need? The basics.
Well, for you, if you wanted to start in your backyard, you need 10 taps and 10, or no, you need some taps. You can start with as many as you want. If you wanted to make a gallon, you need 3 or 4 trees. And you need a way to collect that, and you need to balance how much sap you collect with how big of a boiler you have. So don't tap 100 trees and try to cook it with a turkey cooker. You won't get it done. So each square foot of metal in the bottom of the pan that you put fire on will boil off about 1 gallon of sap or 1 gallon of water per hour. So if you have 10 gallons of sap in a turkey cooker, it'll take you about 10 hours to boil that off.
Okay.
Okay. So, and that's all you need. You can pour it into a container and let the niter settle out and just pour off the good syrup off the top. The niter won't hurt you. You can eat it if you wish.
Well, thank you guys so much, and good luck with all the syrup making this year and the calving, and good luck teaching in your new normal, Judy. Thank you so much for serving our kids like you're doing. We appreciate you teachers so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us speak and having us share our story.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Judy and Harry Worm from Clay Hill Farm and Forest in Brainerd. You can check out their page on Facebook and search Clay Hill Farm and Forest. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show, connecting you to sweet things from the forest.